essential part of the Buddhist teachings is that in the practice we have to learn how to make use of things that eventually we're going to have to learn to let go. We know that at some point the practice involves letting go of desire, but you need to cultivate skillful desire to get to that point. Ultimately involves getting to the total end of fabrication, but the Eightfold Noble Path is a type of fabrication. As the Buddha once said, it's the ultimate level of fabrication. In fact, when you look at the factors of the path, you realize that they're made up of the aggregates. Form, feeling, perception, fabrication, consciousness. These all have to play a role in the path. Which means that we have to learn how to change our attitude towards the aggregates. Instead of just clinging to them as ourselves, we learn how to use them as elements in the path. The important point here is to realize that these things have to be used in a skillful way. When you come to the path, you have to reflect on skills that you've developed in the past, as an artist, as a cook, as a carpenter, as a musician, whatever skills you've worked on in the past, it's good to reflect on how you became skillful, and particularly how you learned how to deal with mistakes. Learning from your mistakes is essential to developing any kind of skill. It's expected that you're going to make mistakes. The teacher tries to help you avoid the really unnecessary ones by pointing them out. In other words, some mistakes are more avoidable than others. But a large part of the practice lies in learning how to deal from your mistakes and not get knocked off course by them. We all like to hear that there's a stage in the practice when you finally attain a certain level of awareness or a certain level of insight. That it's guaranteed that from that point on, nothing you would do will be a mistake. Sometimes you hear that people talking about the choicelessness of the path. You finally get on the path and you realize that there's only one thing to do, and you just do what the path tells you to do or what seems right at any one time. And you'll be guaranteed that there won't be any mistakes. That's not the way it works. Even arahants make mistakes. You know, their virtue in terms of the basics of a virtuous life, i.e. the five precepts, are unshakable. They don't make those mistakes anymore. But simple mistakes in saying the wrong thing to the wrong person, that's simply human. It has nothing to do with defilements in the mind, simply the fact that we are human people, human beings, with limitations. What's different about arahants is they continue to learn from their mistakes. They don't get knocked off course by them because there's no conceit that's going to be challenged by the mistake or destroyed by the mistake or feel threatened by the mistake. But for those of us on the path, that's an issue we have to deal with, this issue of conceit or narcissism. We don't like to think that we're going to have to make mistakes, but there's no other way you're going to learn. This is why the Buddha gives so many instructions on how to learn from your mistakes, how to deal with a mistake. So it actually becomes an important element in the path. There's instructions to Rahula. When you realize that you've done something that's been harmful, one, you resolve not to repeat it, and then two, you go talk it over with someone else who's on the path to see what insight you can get from them. I.e., you admit the mistake, you learn how to recognize it. And that involves developing a fair amount of perceptiveness right there. And also learning from the counsel of others. We sometimes think that the Buddha's instructions to the Gauleamas is to, you know, go by your own sense of right and wrong. But if you look carefully there, even that doesn't In fact, it has nothing to do with what the Buddha said. He said you can't go on totally on the instructions of others, but you can't go on your own idea, preconceived ideas about what's right and wrong. You have to look at what you do and the results of what you've done and what you're doing. And learn to recognize when you've caused harm and when you haven't. And at the same time, you take into consideration the counsel of the wise. And that, of course, requires that you learn how to recognize who's wise and not. So it does throw the whole issue back on you. But it's not that you have to totally reinvent the Dharma wheel as you practice. There is guidance. And when you learn how to make the best use of guidance, it gives you quite a leg up right there. There's another passage where someone comes to the Buddha, a student of the Jains. The Jains were teaching that whoever kills, steals, has illicit sex, whoever lies, whoever takes intoxicants, going to go to hell. This person wanted to know what the Buddha had to say about that. And the Buddha says, well, if you hear that teaching and you realize you've done these things in the past, that's pretty much consigns you to hell right there. It makes it hopeless. His teaching is that these activities are unwise. They should be avoided because they cause harm. You look at what you've done and you realize in the past you've made mistakes like this. So what's the proper attitude to have is to resolve not to do them again. At the same time, realize that if you let yourself get tied up in remorse about your past mistakes, that's not going to undo the old mistake. And at the same time, it's going to make it less likely that you're going to be able to do well in the future. Because remorse saps your strength. So it's more learning to recognize a mistake and resolve, I'm not going to repeat it. And then the Buddha says you develop the sublime attitudes, limitless goodwill, limitless compassion, limitless empathetic joy, limitless equanimity. Learn how to cultivate these emotions, because they help keep you on the right track. Strengthen your resolve not to be harmful, and also teaching you where your limitations are, what you can do, what you can't do in terms of correcting the situation within yourself and with the world around you. Again, these are fabrications too. It's not that our nature is innately kind or innately bad. These are things you have to learn how to cultivate. They're fabrications. So what happens when you come up against some ill will inside you, or some resentment, or an inability to accept the situation as it is? Well, you look at that emotion, you realize it's composed of all the different elements of fabrication. There's the way you breathe. There are the directed thoughts, the way you direct your thinking around that topic, the way you evaluate what's happening, your feelings and your perceptions about what's happening. These are all the elements of fabrication that go into any thought, any emotion. So on the one hand, you want to learn how to take your unskillful emotions apart when you find yourself thinking in an unskillful way. When there's an unskillful emotion that comes up with regard either to yourself or somebody else, ask yourself, what's the breathing that's going on here? How does the breathing affect that emotion? What if I were to make the breath more skillful? In other words, help to get that emotion out of the body. And then look at how you're thinking about the issue. Is there some way you could change your thoughts about the issue? Look at it from a different perspective. A lot of the Buddha's teachings, say, on anger are just that. Look at the situation from another angle. Look at the good in the person who makes you angry. After all, you need their good as much as they do. Because if all you can see are the bad traits of other people, it's like being in a desert. You're hot, tired, trembling, thirsty. And the goodness of other people is like water. You're not in some Olympian position where you can look down on the human race and say, well, they're bad, and these people are bad, and those people are bad, and it doesn't affect you at all. It affects you to be constantly focusing on other people's bad habits. to learn to think about the situation another way, where you realize that you need that water. This changes the element of perception, and along with directed thought and evaluation. And as for the feelings that come up, learn not to identify with them. Just watch them. Okay, these feelings are results of things. They in themselves are not skillful or unskillful. But the way you perceive them and then the thoughts you build around them, those can be skillful and unskillful. So learn how to step back. So use your understanding of fabrication on the one hand to deconstruct unskillful emotions, unskillful mind states. And then you use your knowledge of fabrications to learn how to develop skillful emotions and skillful mind states. We don't usually like the idea of constructing an emotion or fabricating an emotion. It seems too artificial. But we do it all the time. Simply that we're not conscious of it. So as you're meditating, what are you doing? One, you're working with the breath. That's one form of fabrication. Try to make the breaths comfortable. When there's a sense of tension any place in the body, learn how to breathe around it, breathe through it, to relieve as much of the tension as you can without totally losing focus. You direct your thoughts to the breath. You evaluate the breath. What kind of breathing feels good right now? And this is an important part of the practice because it teaches you how to develop your powers of observation. Because on a subtle level, you're learning to recognize your actions and their results, and learning how to read those actions, read those results. And if the results aren't what you want, then you can think of ways of improving them. That all comes under evaluation. There's the feelings. You're trying to work with the breath in such a way as to develop feelings of ease and fullness. And then there are the perceptions. How do you perceive your breath? What mental picture do you have of the breath? And how does that mental picture affect the way you actually breathe? Can you think of the breath as an energy field in the body? Your whole awareness of the body right now is all breath. It's just different levels of breath. If you apply that perception, hold that label in mind, and explore the way you feel the body from the inside, what does it do? You can think of the body as a big sponge, lots of holes for the breath to come in and out from all directions. Comes in, goes out without any sense of blockage, no problem at all. If you perceived it that way, what would it do? In other words, you learn to take these aspects of fabrication and use them to your advantage. And of course you're going to make mistakes, but you can learn from them. Again, by learning how to notice things on your own, learning how to seek advice from other people, learning how to apply their advice in a skillful way. So on the one hand, the Buddha gives you a lot of instructions on how to avoid mistakes, but he also is very open to the issue that we're still going to make mistakes. One level or another. So instead of forbidding you from making mistakes, he gives you advice. When you make a mistake, this is how you handle it. This is how you learn from it. So you do become more skillful. So this process of fabrication can take you to the threshold where there's the unfabricated. You develop your tools. And as with any art, you're not developing the tools because you want to take the tools with you. You apply them, say, your paintbrushes. You're not painting for the sake of paintbrushes. You use the paintbrushes for the sake of the art. And as you've mastered the use of those paintbrushes, then there comes a point when you finish your artwork, you can put the brushes aside. It's the same with the path. You work on developing these elements of the path. Learn how to notice when you've done it well, when you haven't. And that way you develop your skill. This skill, though, especially, it takes you to the threshold, as I said, of the unfabricated. But you can't use the unfabricated to get to the unfabricated. It doesn't work that way. It can't be used as a cause at all. It lies totally outside of the realm of causality, but you can get there through causality, through learning fabrication. As you learn to do it more and more skillfully. So don't be afraid of mistakes. Try to avoid them as much as you can, but don't be afraid of the idea that there will be mistakes down the line. As John Fuhring once said, that no matter what happens in the meditation, there's always a cure for it. If you develop the right attitude. So the conceit that says, I don't want to have any mistakes, and simply want to will your way to a mistake-free life without doing anything, that you've got to put aside. The narcissism of not wanting to be able to have anybody be able to criticize you, that you've got to put aside. As the Buddha once said, if someone points out your faults, regard them as someone has pointed out treasure. Let's learn to live with the fact that, yes, we all make mistakes. Even arahants make some mistakes. But a mistake is not the end of the world. It's your opportunity to learn.